Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Eric Zorn, what do you think about that? Picayune Sentinel publisher, former longtime Chicago Tribune columnist. No phones in the schools. You coming with me, Eric?
I am not with you, John. I think that they ought to be a strong rule against phones being out in the classroom, that the if they're in your knapsack or in your pocket, that's fine. And if they go off, if they ring or make a noise, then they are confiscated for 24 hours. I think that would happen once, and every kid who had it happen would never let it happen again. And the problem is that the kids need them on the way to school, on the way home from school. Sometimes they're not going directly home from school. Sometimes they need a ride from practice. Sometimes they're going to a friend's house. So you say you got to leave them at home. That creates a whole bunch of other issues. So I think there's a way through this that doesn't involve absolutely no smartphones in schools.
I think you really have to be more than strict. Totalitarian is not the right word. I'm trying to think of the word of how hard I would come down on it. But the idea that we're going to have a rule, and by golly, there'll be consequences if you break the rule, mister, I don't think that carries much weight. I think the kids will be damned. They'll do what they want to do. And if you take their phone, by the way, that $600 item that you're responsible for now, or that $900 item, and you break it, or it gets lost, or the parents get mad, you've created a whole new layer of trouble for yourself.
Well, you could create a contract at the beginning of the year that absolves the school of risk. You don't think that the threat hanging over these kids of losing their phone for a day, you know how long a day without a phone would seem to, even to me? I mean, it would just be awful.
Hold on, I'm checking my phone.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Of course you are. We're always on our phones. And I think just a punishment that light, you wouldn't have to do it very many times. And I think it would work. I don't know how schools are handling it these days. You know, it used to be that you couldn't have phones in schools. You couldn't have phones in courthouses. But then people started realizing that these things are so integral to our lives. It's not just a place to watch Netflix, but it's a place to have important communication. It's not an emergency that you need to get picked up from school if you're going to a friend's house or your bus is delayed or anything like that. But it's something that families like to know about each other. And of course, John, you and I grew up at a time when we didn't have this option at all. We had to go to a payphone or go to somebody's house and use a phone, an actual phone that's connected to the wall with a little springy cord, you know, the whole thing. So it can be done, I guess, but our expectations are not that anymore. Our expectation is to be able to be in touch with people at all times and for us to know where each other we're hanging out at all times. So I think that if you were a king and you did this, you would be deposed, and violently so.
Well, it would require that. I mean, because I'd be king and all. All right. Speaking of violently deposing people, you spent some time, Eric Zorn's on the line, the Picayune Sentinel publisher, his weekly newsletter with commentary and comedy and more. You can search the Picayune Sentinel online or just email ericzorn@gmail.com. Put you on the list. You wrote about Kyle Rittenhouse a lot this week. Why is he on your mind?
Well, he's on my mind because he seems to be on the media's mind these days. And I assembled some headlines just in the last few weeks. You know, Kyle Rittenhouse meets with House GOP members. Kyle Rittenhouse marks Thanksgiving promoting a violent video game starring himself. Kyle Rittenhouse insists his girlfriend is not a gold digger. Twitter drags Kyle Rittenhouse for appearing to compare himself to Jesus. Kyle Rittenhouse goes viral after asking if Twitter files will reveal hidden censoring against him. This was just yesterday. So Rittenhouse just remains in the news. And to remind anyone who has perhaps forgotten, Kyle Rittenhouse was the teenager from Antioch, Illinois, who in August of 2020 went up to Kenosha for the Black Lives Matter protest up there. And he's carried an assault-style weapon around, seeking to ostensibly to protect businesses from the looting that had taken place the night before. And he ended up in a violent confrontation in which other men were killed and another man was badly wounded. And he became this cause celeb on the left and the right. The left saw him as a violent vigilante and an example of what white racism can do. And the right saw him as a proud defender of gun rights and someone who used his weapon in self-defense as God intended. And it became this amazingly big issue over this kid who was attacked by people in this group of protesters and who shot to defend himself. And I said right away, I'm a lefty columnist, and I'm aghast at the way at the damage that guns do. But I could see right away from the videos that were available that this was a pretty clear case of self-defense, and he was going to get off.
I agreed with you on that, by the way. At least in one of the shootings, I think that guy was going to break his neck, and he had a gun rolled over on his back, and then pow, 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 shot that guy, and tried to shoot and kill somebody else. That guy did not get hit. Not much is said about that, but he actually fired at another guy point blank and missed.
Well, he did Gage Greisgruntz, I think his name is, the third victim. He did blow off part of his arm. He did hit him in the arm, but he survived.
I'm not talking about that guy. Well, we don't have to dwell on that point, but keep going, Eric. Keep going.
The details, I mean, they are important. I went over them in great detail in writing about this, which was, I had no sympathy for Kyle Rittenhouse. I thought that we should not allow people to open carry weapons, especially in volatile situations like they had in Kenosha that night. That's just asking for trouble. It got people all excited and angry and felt provoked, and it was a really bad situation. I think that having open carry is a bad idea. And so, I was on that side of this, and I thought Kyle Rittenhouse was a mope, but I realized right away that he was going to be a bad person to try to hang as an example of something, that he was going to walk and that it wasn't going to be outrageous because what he did comported with the laws of self-defense in Wisconsin and for the most part everywhere, that if you are attacked by somebody and you are in fear of great bodily harm. And the first attack on him, guy was running at him, a rather large muscular guy was running at him, yelling and swearing at him, and kind of cornered him in the corner of a parking lot. And so he shot him to defend himself. And I just thought a jury was never going to convict him on that. And then a bunch of people started chasing him down the street and swinging skateboards at him and yelling, get him, get him. And he fell down. And he felt set upon. And just looking at it, I thought, well, this is going to be self-defense, and we should not allow the right to turn him into a martyr. And they did. And after he was convicted, I wrote a column saying, "Oh, he's going to go away now. He served his usefulness, but he's just stuck around. And now he's talking about maybe he's going to start up a YouTube channel defending gun rights, and he's talking about maybe running for Congress. And this is a guy. This is like a sort of a driftless, aimless teenager who went up to Kenosha to think he was going to protect used car lots with his hunting rifle." And all of a sudden, he's a national political figure, and in large part because of all the obloquy that was heaped on him by the left, that I thought was misdirected. I think that they should not have even mentioned his name. They should have said, this is an example of what the problem is with open carry of weapons. That when you have people who are carrying around these assault weapons or assault-style weapons in these volatile situations, it is a recipe for exactly what happened here, whether it's justified or not. And I think it was a case of self-defense. So my argument is like, please, let's not act like we're going to heap more scorn on Kyle Rittenhouse. Let's ignore the guy and hope that he goes away, because that's about all we can do. It's what we should have done from the beginning.
I think that even holds true when you talk about stories of mass shooters. You shouldn't mention their name. I mean, once in a while, I understand why accurate reporting has to say that, but you can talk about what happened in Highland Park and a number of other places without mentioning the name of the person over and over again. In some twisted minds out there, that's another affirmation. That's another hit. That's another sort of enticement to be that guy that everybody's talking about. I wouldn't even mention their names after the first flush. This case in Colorado of the woman who's developing a website, it's interesting, isn't it? Normally, to have standing, to demonstrate injury or harm, you have to have actually done something upon which you would then sue or ask the court to intervene. In this case, the woman is being proactive. I'm surprised the Supreme Court is even considering her case. But she wants to develop on her webpage a opportunity for people to have their weddings. I'm not exactly sure. I guess she would be like a web page for your wedding. Anyway, she's a graphic designer, and she does not want to provide that service for same-sex couples. And it looks like the court is going to rule in her favor, just based on some of the things that they've said. It's a case of free speech versus, is it discrimination? What are your 20,000 feet thoughts about that, Eric?
Well, I did pay attention to these arguments yesterday, and it is, you're right, it's a very strange case because the woman has not been asked to do a gay marriage website or gay wedding website, and she doesn't even do wedding websites at all. She's just a designer. She does things like dog sitting, things like that. And the question is whether this is a creative expression, making a website. And actually, most wedding websites are just like plug and play. You put in the address, you put in a photo, you put in the time and place and the link to the gift registry, and that's pretty much it. So it's kind of strange for her to be arguing that this is an expressive, like it's like someone is asking her to paint a portrait or something like that. But the broader issue here is whether we consider gay people and gay couples to be protected by the same sorts of laws that protect people based on race and sex and religion. And I believe that myself, that the gay marriage and gay rights and things like that are categories that should be protected. And that people who are saying that they, I'm not saying you have to endorse something like that, but you don't have to endorse say interracial marriage, which is I think much more widely accepted. If you run a restaurant, you have to serve people who, even if your food is very creative, you have to serve interracial couples. And I think that the progress that we've made on this is recognizing that gay people at home, that are part of this protected class, and that this ruling threatens to undermine all of that if they take it away, which means that suddenly you could say, and also, what is the logic then of saying if they're not protected? If gay people aren't protected like this, then what is the logic? What is the logic about racial discrimination? What is the logic about sexual discrimination? Could a photographer, one of the examples came up in the argument, could a photographer say, I'm not going to take corporate CEO headshots of women because I think women, my religious beliefs tell me that women belong in the home. Is that something that someone should be allowed to do? Someone who's providing a service to the public, running a
business. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. A lot of those scenarios came up, and some of them I thought were so extreme, so unique that I didn't worry about those scenarios. But I guess we have to worry about those scenarios. If they make the point, then they make the point. But it does make one almost wonder if a business could just do a don't ask, don't tell. That is, if those are my religious beliefs and you come to my website or my business and say, hey, I want to contract your services to develop a web page for me, you could say, you know what, I'm not going to take you, and I don't need to offer an explanation. I'm busy, I don't want to, I don't want to work that hard, I'm taking Saturday off, whatever it is. You could just not perform the business. Why does this have to be a constitutional issue? I don't like that, because constitutionally they should be protected in my estimation. But it seems to me like in the case of this specific web designer in Colorado, then don't do it. You don't have to do every case that walks in the door, right? I mean, I wonder what's wrong with my logic there.
Right. Well, I'm a little uncomfortable with it because I am imagining in cases like, say, a real estate agent who deals in a certain neighborhood who every time a black couple comes into the door says, I'm really busy, or, we're all out of properties, we can't have any. So that I'm not comfortable with that analogy, that approach. I mean, I just think that when it comes to some of these basic services that are provided by these businesses, that they should say, if you're going to get into the web design business, you can't turn people away because of their sexual orientation. And you can't turn people away based on your feelings about gay marriage. And it doesn't go ahead.
We're out of time, Eric. I wanted to finish this. Okay. Justice Sotomayor said this would be the first time in the court's history that a commercial business open to the public, serving the public, that it could refuse to serve a customer based on race, sex, religion, or sexual orientation. We'll talk more about this on the Mincing Rascals podcast. We will record that tomorrow. And you can read stuff like this on Eric Zorn's page, the Picayune Sentinel. You can just email ericzorn@gmail.com. He'll sign you up. Nice to talk to you today, Mr. Zorn.
Thanks, John. We'll talk tomorrow.
Supreme Court has two different but really monumental cases. Well, that's my word. Let's see what our guest says. One's about the Supreme Court trying to decide if a web designer has a free speech right, or is it discriminating against same-sex marriage? And then we have one that might change the way the Electoral College votes are counted. Let's talk to Carolyn Shapiro, who is a professor of law at Chicago's Kent College of Law and the co-director of the Institute on the Supreme Court there. Carolyn, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where should we start? Which of these cases deserves to go first?
Well, they're both very important cases, but why don't we talk about the one that was argued yesterday, which is the one about the web designer.
Okay, so that's a woman who doesn't feel that she should have to design wedding pages for same-sex couples. That's in violation of her Christian beliefs. Her name is Lori Smith. She owns a design company and says that she serves gay customers but intends to limit a proposed wedding-related service only to heterosexual couples. What should I know about that?
So it's important to know, first of all, that she has not, in fact, made a wedding website for anyone.
Yeah.
She has not offered the service. She has a there are no actual facts in this case. There's her complaint that she doesn't want to start offering the service because if she does, she will get into trouble with Colorado's Human Rights Commission. The issue, there's two related issues. The first issue is whether by providing a website or a website template or web design, the speech involved is her speech, or whether she's only providing a service, in which case the service is not considered, it would not be considered her expressive conduct. The second issue is that even if it is her speech, does the state of Colorado nonetheless have a good enough reason to regulate how and what she says? And those are two distinct questions, and they're both at issue in this case.
Her speech versus their speech, meaning that providing the service doesn't mean that you're actually violating your own personal beliefs. We're not asking you to say something that is in disagreement with your Christian values. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. She's, you know, if you could imagine that if it's an off-the-shelf website that, you know, basically she gives to people and they fill in all the details, that she's not, that's not really her speech at all. It's simply providing the opportunity for other people to express their own views.
But what if somebody asked her to design a site for them and they're a same-sex couple, and then she said no?
So the issue in Colorado is that she's not allowed to discriminate. So it depends on what her as what's called a public accommodation. So under the Colorado law, public accommodation is a business that offers its services to the public at large. So since she's doing that, at least that's one type of public accommodation, since she's doing that, the law says she has to offer the same service to everyone. So if she's never offered a customized website that includes a lot of her own views, she doesn't, and a gay couple came to her and asked her to do it, she wouldn't have to say yes. She doesn't. That's not a service she offers. The question is, at least in part, whether in the absence of any actual facts, so we have some mock-ups of websites, but we don't know exactly what her website looked like. Can this case even be resolved?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. I thought you had to have been harmed. You had to have some standing, and she's being proactive here. I didn't know courts would take a case like this. And just answer this.
Well, it's a controversial question about this case.
Well, if, for instance, couldn't she have resolved this without going to the courts? As a business person, you don't have to take every customer that knocks on the door. So what if she just silently, God, I hate to say this, but I'll finish the sentence. What if she quietly discriminated against some people because she just didn't want to work with them?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is that this is a very carefully planned lawsuit. She is represented by an entity called the Alliance Defending Freedom, which has been working very hard to make it possible for some for people who are opposed to same-sex marriage and believe that homosexuality is immoral, to allow those people to discriminate. And they've brought a series of cases in a series of contexts, and they have not yet gotten what they want. So, you know, I don't think this is really a cake. There's a lot of reason to believe that this case was sort of cooked up as a way to get the issue in front of the Supreme Court.
Sonia Sotomayor said this will be the first time in the court's history that we have denied somebody based on their race, sex, religion, or orientation. Do you concur with that?
Well, I mean, yes, except yes and no. I mean, there's certainly historical cases in which the court has not honored people's rights on those bases. If you think back to cases like Bowers versus Hardwick, which was a 1986 case that upheld states' rights to make sodomy illegal, to criminalize sodomy, for example, there are certain sex acts. So I think she may have overstated it, but I think she is certainly correct that this would be a move. I don't know of a situation where rights had been recognized and then the court moved away from them.
Carolyn, we'll have to have the second part of this conversation tomorrow, but let's finish on this point today. It does seem as though this conservative court is going to lean in favor of this woman in Colorado. Would you handicap it that way? Does it look like that's the decision they're going to render?
I think so. I mean, Justice Thomas apparently did ask some questions about this issue of whether she had standing, but I would definitely put my money on her prevailing in the Supreme Court.
And so how should we interpret that? I mean, those are compelling stakes, aren't they? Free speech versus discrimination. Will there be some justice in this case, or will this be an abomination if, in fact, they rule for her?
It's very hard to answer that without seeing the opinion. I think the one of the problems with the case coming up in the absence of any facts is that what they're going to say is really going to be a series of hypotheticals or perhaps general statements that are going to be applied by the lower courts, and there's going to be a period of significant disruption. So I don't know, to be perfectly honest, that it's going to be possible to write a narrow opinion that won't have enormous effects and rule for her, but we'll see.
Carolyn Shapiro is at Chicago's Kent College of Law and the co-director of the Institute on the Supreme Court there. Tomorrow, if you can join us, I'll ask you about the other case, which considers how votes are counted in the Electoral College, gerrymandering, and more. Thanks for your time today, Carolyn.
My pleasure. Thank you.